Financial fragmentation induced by geopolitical tension could have important implications for financial stability by affecting cross-border allocation of capital, international payment system, and asset prices.
Financial stability never comes easy, but the past few months have been especially challenging with persistently high inflation and a couple of bank failures that exposed vulnerabilities lurking beneath the surface. The latest Global Financial Stability Report examines all the worrying trends, and they're not all strictly economic. The report shows even the smallest increase in geopolitical tensions between investing and recipient countries can have a big impact.
That could reduce bilateral cross-border portfolio and bank allocation by about 15%. My name is Fabio Nadalucci. I'm a deputy director in the Monetary and Capital Market Departments of the IMF. I'm responsible for the Global Financial Stability Report, the GFSR, which is one of the flagship of the IMF, as well as for the broader global financial markets monitoring.
Great. Thank you so much. And welcome back to the podcast. So we speak basically twice a year, and up until last spring, or I guess maybe a little earlier for some regions, we were pretty much always talking about the risks associated with investors looking for yield in a low interest rate environment, which resulted in some very strong market activity for a very long time. We're now seeing a dramatic change on many levels. So are we paying the price for all those years of super low rates?
So in the aftermath of the global financial crisis, in an environment that had extremely low interest rate, compressed volatility, very ample liquidity, market participants increased their exposure to a number of risks, right? Liquidity, duration, credit risk, and often they use financial leverage to boost return, expected return. Now, these vulnerabilities have kept the financial stability risk elevated. A number of these vulnerabilities have been flagged in previous issues of the Global Financial Stability Report in the past few years. Now, these vulnerabilities are being exposed in the current high inflation environment with central bank tightening monetary policy and removing liquidity aggressively to bring inflation back to target. Now, the disinflationary pressure going slower than anticipated, the rapid pace of policy tightening, and again, I want to stress the word rapid pace here. It's not just the level of where central banks are taking policy rates, but also the pace of that tightening is causing fundamental shifts in the financial risk landscape. So asset allocation, asset prices, market conditions are all adjusting, challenging market structure, challenging investor and financial institution. And what we see is the emergence of a number of pressure points in the global financial system.
And so we saw two U.S. banks fail last month, SVB and Signature Bank. How did those two U.S. bank failures turn so quickly into a global financial issue? And what does it tell us about the current state of the banking sector more broadly?
So the sudden failure of these two banks, so Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank in New York, those were two mid-sized banks in the U.S., as well as importantly, I think we want to point out to the loss of confidence in Credit Suisse. That's a globally systemically important bank in Europe. I think those are powerful reminder of the challenges faced by the interaction between tighter monetary and financial condition and the build up of these vulnerabilities. Part of it also has been amplified by new technology, right? So the rapid spread of information through social media. So what in the US initially it looked like an isolated event or a couple of events in the banking sector quickly have spread to banks, financial market across the world. They have caused a sharp repricing of interest rate expectation and a dramatic sell-off of risk assets. Now, there's been a very forceful response by policymakers to stem systemic risk and reduce market anxiety. Now, despite some of these improvements of late, we have seen some asset prices recovering the losses back then, more than recovering, actually. Mm-hmm. But market sentiment still remain fragile. There are still strains evident across a number of institutions and markets. So I think it remains to be seen whether the measures that have been taken so far has been sufficient to restore confidence in markets. Now, you ask about banking. Mm-hmm. Again, this has been another reminder that funding can disappear very rapidly, right? And even that events at small banks or what they appear to be small banks can have systemic implication if they trigger widespread loss of confidence and fears that spread very quickly across the system, again, amplified by technology and social media. The issue here is that there have been shifting pattern of deposit across institutions. They could raise funding for banks, that could restrict the ability to provide credit down the road, considering the banks were already tightening lending standards going into this episode.
And the fact that non-bank financial institutions have become more integrated into the banking system over the years, how does that play into this scenario?
Yeah, so the what we call NBFI or non-bank financial intermediaries, they play a key role in global financial system, right? They increase access to credit, they support economic growth, but they have financial vulnerabilities that have been increasing in recent years when rates are very low, right? Particularly, we point to elevated leverage, liquidity mismatch, and high level of interconnectedness between the banking sector and the non-banking sector. Now, there's been a number of stress events going into this most recent one. If you go back a year or so, they have required aggressive intervention by policymakers. Right? So you can take the United Kingdom, for example. There was forced selling by pension funds in the fall that required targeted temporary purchases by the Bank of England to stabilize the sovereign debt markets. Or if you look at Korea, authorities had to deploy a slew of tools, including reusing some of the COVID-era asset purchase programs to address strains in what's called the asset-backed commercial paper in October 2022. Now, the common thread, I think, across all these events is a combination of vulnerabilities, so liquidity, maturity mismatch, financial leverage, interconnectedness, that have been lurking under the surface of the global financial system for years. Mm-hmm. And market participants honestly fail to adequately prepare for rate increases sometimes. So possible disruption in funding markets and also links across the financial system, right? So what's obvious now in hindsight, the systemic implication of the existing weaknesses, I think, were generally unanticipated in the financial system. And so when the risk materialized, the systemic implication have become clear and they have required immediate policy intervention by policymakers.
Mm-hmm. And so what about emerging markets? Are they exposed to the same risks as advanced economies? I know the report suggests that the global financial system may well be exposed to weaknesses there.
Yeah, so let me make a point about banks. I think why it's important to look at banks, right? And we try to do it with the US, and then I'll link it back to the end. Mm-hmm. Right. So the focus in the US is about essentially what we call regional banks, right? These banks have a deposit, concentrated deposit base. They have high exposure in duration risk. And this is what we have seen that has been systemic. There would be greater scrutiny in terms of holdings and expectation by market participants. They would be subject to more stringent supervision regulation. Now, what we're trying to do, we do a little exercise in the GFSI where we're trying to map the decline in bank equity prices to the lending capacity of these banks and showing that given where bank equity prices were at the close of the report, that means a decline in lending capacity of about 1 percentage point coming year. That would bring back the global real GDP for the US by about 50 basis points. So my point is tightening standards has implication for lending capacity and for growth. Now, why does it matter in emerging market? I think in emerging market, it's important because banks play a larger role in the financial system compared to more advanced economies. So if there is weakness in the banking sector, that likely would have a bigger impact in terms of growth. Now, emerging markets appear so far to have avoided the pressure that we have seen in advanced economies. They generally have less exposure to interest rate risk. They have a lower share of mark-to-market securities. They have a higher share of funding through retail deposits. They are less flighty. Now, that said, a number of countries do have low levels of deposit insurance coverage, right, in case there is a run. And many sovereigns also have less fiscal and monetary space to address problems in the banking sector should such problem arise. And so, finally, they also have assets with lower asset quality than those in advanced economies. So that suggests that if there is a deterioration in confidence in the banking sector, it could have an impact on the profitability of the banks.
And so where do central banks stand in all this, given the rates had a lot to do with those two banks that we spoke of earlier failing? Do central banks now have the jitters? And how might that influence their approach to fighting inflation, which is still a problem?
Right. So the emergence of stress in financial markets is complicating the task of central banks, right? Particularly at the time when inflationary pressure seems to be more persistent than anticipated or hoped for. Now, prior to this stress episode, interest rate in advanced economies were rising sharply. And there was the gap essentially between market pricing and central bank communication was shrinking. particularly the communication about the need to keep monetary policy restrictive for longer. However, after these episodes and these stress episodes, the path to policy has moved lower. And so now investors anticipate central bank to actually begin to ease monetary policy well in advance of what was priced in. But unfortunately, inflation remained uncomfortably high and well above target. So how to deal with this? The availability of tools aimed at addressing financial stability risk should help central banks separate monetary policy objective from financial stability goals, so allowing them effectively to continue to tighten monetary policy and address inflationary pressure. If financial pressure intensifies, though, significantly and threatens the health of the financial system amid high inflation, then trade-off between financial stability and inflation could emerge. Mm-hmm. And so clear communication about central bank objective and policy function at that point would be crucial to minimize uncertainty. Obviously, central banks should act swiftly to prevent any systemic event that could shake confidence in the system, because confidence is at the core of the financial sector, right? So you need to take every step possible to do that. But should they need to adjust the stance of monetary policy to support financial stability, it's very important that central bank clearly communicate their continued resolve to bring inflation back to target as soon as possible once financial stress lessens.
Okay, so the report also looks at how geopolitical tensions and an increasingly fragmented world are posing additional risks to the financial system. What are the concerns there?
So the report points to a number of downside risks to the global economy, right? And those risks remain elevated. Apart from financial stress, there are other possible sorts of macroeconomic risk that could have macro-financial implications. Escalation of the war in Ukraine, sharp rebound of activity in China that push up energy prices, again, at a time when inflation is high. And then we look at rising geopolitical tension that could result in financial fragmentation, causing sudden reversal in cross-border capital flows, particularly for emerging markets, and exacerbate financial stability. Now, how do we look at this? I think the idea is that financial fragmentation induced by geopolitical tension could have important implication for financial stability by affecting cross-border allocation of capital, international payment system, and asset prices. Essentially, if you look at geopolitical tension, they matter for cross-border political allocation. We ran a little exercise and we showed a one standard deviation increase in geopolitical tension between investing and recipient country. That's more or less the diverging voting pattern, for example, between the US and China in the United Nations since 2016. That could reduce bilateral cross-border portfolio and bank allocation of about 15%. That's not a small number. Could also cause sudden reversal of cross-border capital flows. And this effect would be more pronounced for emerging markets and developing economies. How that link to financial stability? This is because that sort of shock could, in fact, increase banks' funding costs, reducing profitability, lowering their provision of credit to the private sector. And again, this is likely to be larger, particularly for banks that have lower capitalization. And so finally, there is also more long-term impact, because if you have greater financial fragmentation related to geopolitical tension, in the long term, the benefits from reducing international risk diversification opportunities could actually have an impact on growth. Mm.
So how do you see this playing out in the coming months? I mean, do you think that the dust will settle, or is this just a taste of what's to come?
I think the fundamental question now that confronting both market participants and policymakers is whether these recent events are a harbinger of more financial systemic risk to come down the road, mm-hmm. testing the resilience of the global financial system, like sort of like a canary in the coal mine,
right?
Or just the isolated manifestation of challenges, almost like a natural manifestation of challenges from tighter monetary and financial condition after more than 10 years of low rates and volatility. Now, to be clear, there is little doubt that regulatory changes that have been implemented since the global financial crisis, particularly for the largest bank, have made the financial system generally more resilient. But there are still concerns about vulnerability that may be hidden, right? I mentioned some of those. In fact, investors appear to be looking for stress points, for fragilities, including links, as we discussed, between the banking sector and the non-bank financial intermediation sector that may have been underestimated or missed. Now, the issue is that exposure losses can be masked for a while because of accounting rules, as we have seen for the bank in California, regulatory treatment, other factors that maybe require some asset to be valued not at market value, or because are hidden in some corner of the financial system that are more opaque or less visible. But those exposure and losses do not disappear. Mm-hmm. Losses related to those exposure need to be allocated somewhere in the financial system. So complacency in addressing them tends to be an amplifier of market stress once they get realized. If I may, one sector we are looking at particularly, that it's a little bit at the crossroad between banking and non-bank financial sector, is the commercial real estate market. This has been covered in previous global financial stability report. I think you and I also have discussed that, right? And that sector is under pressure from a combination of factors. One, it's a worsening of fundamentals, right? So structural issues, post-pandemic shifts in office and real estate demand, but also from tighter funding costs as a result of the financial stress. For example, in the US, banks with more than $250 billion account for about three-quarters of commercial real estate bank lending. So a deterioration in asset quality would have significant repercussion for those banks. And then in addition, NBFI play an important role, both in terms of real estate investment trusts, REITs, as well as the commercial market-backed securities, which has a broad set of investors in the sector. So that stress in that sector would have broad implication for financial stability and economic growth.
Well, no lack for risks in this Global Financial Stability Report. Fabio Natalucci is the head of that report that comes out twice a year. Always a pleasure, Fabio. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Fabio Natalucci is Deputy Director in the Monetary and Capital Markets Department. Look for the latest Global Financial Stability Report at imf.org/GFSR. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you listen. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.